you know, the incentives help, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
When you tell them, you know, like, hey, man, hey, you want to join our get rich slow scheme? Like, it's pretty cool. How do you get rich? How do you get rich? Do nothing. That's the secret. Do nothing. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it's most people don't believe you because it's too good to be true. Even though doing nothing is actually one of the hardest things to do, ironically.
What's going on, my fellow Bitcoiners? I'm John Chenault, and welcome to episode 21 of the Bitcoin Path podcast. This is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and self-sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. For this episode, I'm excited to share my conversation with Jason Zhang. Besides being a really good friend of mine, Jason is an advisor at LibertyX, which is the largest Bitcoin ATM network in the US. He's also a producer for the No Agenda show. I had the pleasure of meeting Jason at my first ever Bitcoin meetup in the fall of 2020, and we became quick friends. He and I threw the Have Fun Staying Club party in Miami just before the Bitcoin 2021 conference, and we're planning a repeat event for this coming April in 2022. So stay tuned for that. You can follow Jason on Twitter at JZO. And I'm really excited to share this episode with you guys. We had a really great two-hour conversation about a lot of different things. Jason's been in the community for a long time, so we get some of his backstory and some of his perspective on Bitcoin in the early days, back in the olden days in Bitcoin. And we talk about how we see the Bitcoin community thriving and the Bitcoin network itself just thriving amid the global chaos and clown world that we see devolving around us. We talk about getting into real estate a little bit and how the demonetization of real estate will change what property ownership looks like. We also talk about the social layer of Bitcoin. I know that's a big topic for me and Jason as well, and just how its robust distribution of relationships and communities are really what matters when the shit hits the fan. We also talk about the key role that meetups have played in Jason's career and his involvement with Bitcoin. If you guys like the show, if you want to support the show, feel free to like and subscribe and share with anyone that you think might be interested in it. And check out thebitcoinpath.com to learn more about other events and ways to contribute. And with that, let's get into this episode with Jason Zhang.
Yeah. I love the way you put those logs on the fire. That is sexy. All right, Jason, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Bitcoin Path.
Thanks, John.
It's a pleasure to have you on. You know, you and I have had just so many conversations about Bitcoin and about just what this show is about. And to me, it just seems natural that we should just have a conversation. And given the fact that we haven't caught up in a couple weeks, I figured why not jump on a show here and record it and share our chemistry for the rest of the world.
Yeah, right. Yeah, never. We've talked plenty, but it's never been put down on a permanent record. So
right. So welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks, bud. Long time coming.
To start off, you're kind of a hidden gem, in my opinion, in the Bitcoin world. So why don't you just give a little bit of an introduction to who you are, what you're about, and kind of your background.
Well, grew up, my family, we were always entrepreneurs. My dad owned businesses. We were very involved growing up with the business. It was kind of, our life didn't have a typical nine to five parents. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. I managed apartments for a while. I ran a garden center. It was all part of my family enterprise. I struck out, did property management, learned property management, did construction, both for my family and for just independently. And then after 2008, after the financial collapse, it's hard to think back and remember how significant of a moment that was. I mean, you know, of course, it wasn't the same in any way as 9/11, but there was kind of that same panic in the air. It's like one of those events where everybody remembers where they were when they first heard. You know, I was driving in my my Daewoo Laganza and listening to NPR, and they're talking about, like, everybody's like, just this fear. Even like the NPR, the news anchors, like, they sounded afraid. And it's just, you know, the whole thing struck me. I was, you know, at that time, I knew very little about money. I mean, I knew how to, I'd closed deals, like, I'd used money, I'd refinanced and purchased, like, multifamily apartment buildings. So, you know, like, I was familiar with the mechanics of it, but as far as I was concerned, it was just numbers on a piece of paper. And then didn't really understand what those numbers represented. And I guess I kind of did a deep dive. What was it? It was a cartoon that came out around, everything started collapsing, and I got really curious. Like, what is this? How is this happening? Why is all of a sudden everything on the verge of collapse? Like, that's not the story I've been told. We shouldn't be able to get to that point. Remembered this kind of cartoon thing called The American Dream. And it was kind of an explanation in cartoon format of how mortgages worked and how loans worked. And it was a very ham-handed attempt, and, you know, much more sophisticated. Now I understand how money is actually created. This was a child's version of that, but it started me on the path to thinking and learning I've always kind of questioned the nature of my reality. I question a lot. Like, why? I never just assumed that this is things just have to stay this way because that's the way they've always been. But I had never really applied that to the base layer of money. Money wasn't something you questioned. So this led me to start to question money and learn about it. And I got really pissed. I was really angry. Ron Paul was around at the time, 2008. Getting off tangent here, but anyway, yeah, so I got really into gold and silver, and became a gold bug and a silver bug. Learned a lot from Peter Schiff, funny enough. I always say it's one of those ironies is that if it wasn't for Peter Schiff, I wouldn't be involved with Bitcoin. You know, he's such a hater. And I was watching a lot of Max Keiser. Max was really into the buy silver, crash JP Morgan. You know, basically he wanted to do, this is back in, I don't know, 10 or 11. What all the Reddit autists did with GameStop, he wanted to do with silver, and he wanted to try and break JP Morgan. And, you know, got involved naively just all you had to do was buy silver, right? Smash that buy button, except that took physical silver. It's a bit different than just buying stock on Robinhood. Anyway, Max was one of the first ones that was talking about Bitcoin, and I kind of, you know, was like, oh wow, sound money, the same thing. We've got a fixed supply, but it's the same properties I love in gold, but now it's just like for the modern era, right? Something that's not so physical, not so hard to move. And, you know, it's that tweet I made the other day, and it's a retweet, I believe, but Bitcoin gives me hope. Whereas gold and silver, like, I was betting on like the Mad Maxness of society. I was betting everything was going to go to shit. Guns and ammo and food and water and, it was going to be an apocalyptic thing. And then, you know, Bitcoin comes along and it's like, wow, this is actually a vision for how we can still have sound money and all the benefits that society gets from that without having to just completely regress, our civilization back to the 1900s. That made me, it's always been very lonely being a gold bug. You're kind of an outcast, and it's the same thing back then for Bitcoin. It was very lonely space. You're crazy. Everybody thinks you're a lunatic. You spend all your time trying to explain this magical internet money, and started meeting up with some people in Philadelphia, and we founded the Bitcoin Philadelphia meetup. Just really appreciated being able to sit together and not have to convince or explain what Bitcoin was and how it worked. We were able to talk about higher level stuff and learn. So yeah, founded that. We were doing weekly meetups. It's me, this guy Christoph Atlas, and this other fella, Derek J. Freeman, who are both still active. Christoph is working for blockchain.info. He's been like their security guy for a long time. And Derek is up in Keene, New Hampshire, though. Unfortunately, he's fallen into the BSV camp, which is really strange. Of the three of us, I was the only one who stayed Bitcoin. Christoph went BCH, and then Derek diverged even further into BSV. So very strange. Like I wonder how that all worked out and why it worked that way.
Sometimes. Yeah, those early days are fascinating because it was almost. I mean, the path is strewn with obstacles, I suppose. Like it's a treacherous journey into self-sovereignty, to where along the way you get tempted into all different kinds of like scams, into other ways of using what like influence or what money you acquire, and especially for people who are newly wealthy and unfamiliar with that process, maybe that heightens the volatility of like straying away into.
Well, I think something also happened because the three of us were all gold and silver bugs before that, because it was early, right? You there weren't any other forks. It was just everybody there. It was pretty much came from gold and silver and the anarchist libertarian movement,
right.
Or objectivist. Right. And, with objectivism, with the libertarian movement, there was a lot of cult of personality. Let me close this door here. A lot of cult of personality. And, Derek, he followed Roger Ver. And it was almost like oppositional, like intentionally just, they were more like they're obsessed with just going against whatever the popular movement was as well. Now Bitcoin's mainstream. We got to fork that off. But at the same time, I said, wait a second, we're trying to create this network, this monetary network. You can't keep just siphoning yourself or funneling yourself down into smaller and smaller networks. It doesn't work that way. And Derek and I, I admit it, like, but when the fork wars happened, I didn't know which way to go. I didn't know big blocks or small blocks. I had no idea. I'm just a fool, right? I just listened to as many podcasts as possible, listened to the arguments. And to me, the small block argument, just the personalities involved and the arguments they made just seemed so much more coherent and thought out than the big block guys. This seemed kind of, the big blockers, their arguments always ended up seeming childish to me. Almost like, it's like, well, hey, why, we got global warming. Why don't we just all turn on our air conditioners and open up the windows? Like that kind of argument where, you've got to think about the engineering and the resources that go into this. Like that doesn't make sense. It sounds great until you think about it for 2 seconds. Derek and I, back in 2013, our mission was merchant adoption. So payments was a really big deal. And that's what got me into Bitcoin, because I've been in retail for a long time. My family, we had a garden centers from 88 until 2003, and paying 2 or 3% of every transaction really rubbed me the wrong way. So the idea that we could do, instant free transactions, that was a huge selling point of Bitcoin then. And, we were going around Philadelphia canvassing, trying to get businesses to sign up to accept Bitcoin. We did. We had the first brewery in the country, a bunch of stores, coffee shops, retail galleries, scooter places. And you know what happened? Nothing. Nothing, literally nothing. Nobody
no
bought
one paid
shit.
Bitcoin.
Nobody bought with Bitcoin except for like me and all the other, you know, guys that were doing it just as a matter of principle. And I learned from that. You know, and that was part of the lesson is that, you know, Bitcoin's for hodling, not for spending. At least for the moment, not eternally. It's not a commandment. It's just a rule of thumb.
Right.
We had buy and replace. Then it was, you know, move to buy and replace, which was a hassle. Thank goodness we now have things like Strike, which makes spending Bitcoin so much easier and almost like I think you're negligent if you don't try and use Bitcoin now because we have the tools. No,
right.
All the objections to why you shouldn't spend Bitcoin have been addressed through technology and, you know, systems and stuff like that. So now we can do it. So we should, I think, to just get that money moving around and get it into the hands of people who are trying to accumulate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's been like, so fascinating to come into this over for me being fairly new just over the last year, having like really dove into the community and into trying to wrap my head around Bitcoin. And it's just such a fascinating world where you have all these competing interests and competing ideologies and ideas of like how things should develop. Things just progress and eventually like now we have the Lightning Network and we're able to stream payments very easily over the internet it's truly fascinating how even amongst all the volatile like disagreement and massive arguments this thing just keeps going. And developing, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, it really is, and it, you know, it's just something just struck me is it's kind of like the. So I was at a Bitcoin conference, and somebody from Zappo came up, and this was I think pre-Fork Wars, and I remember so what was it Cesares, the Cesares guy Raymond or Roland Cesares. And then they brought this woman on stage who was going to be, I don't know, their CFO or something like that. And she sat down and she said, oh, okay, well, hey, the adults are in the room now. And I found it very condescending. Very, very insulting. But the point was, so he eventually came around and he actually is one of the few that apologized for the SegWit2x, the guy that ran Zappo. My point was that it's that there's a whole bunch of noise in this space, but the Bitcoiners and the Lightning people and you know, the people that would, I guess, consider themselves maximalists have just, you know, mostly kept their head down and have been working hard, engineering, doing what needs to be done in the background, not getting caught up in the hype, not getting caught up in the scams. Like they're acting like the adults, like the parents, the responsible parents, while all the children, they play around with their shiny toys and, you know, their little scribblings in their crayon books and mess around. But, you know,
right.
There's probably probably only a few thousand people that are actually doing the really hard work that is required to make this thing, be able to roll out. And it's happening. Like even the last week, the news is super exciting.
So tapping into that, like what are some of the most exciting things to you that are happening right now?
I think what was really cool was Substack. I think the Substack thing was really cool. I would really like to see, the entire advertiser content creator model get flipped on its head. I don't think that I don't think that advertisers should be paying content creators to create content. Put out there for people. It messes up the incentives. And I think the consumers of content should be paying the content creators. And I think the consumers of consumer goods should be paying the advertisers should be getting paid by the advertisers to be advertised to. Instead, this is weird indirect triangle. So the Substack thing is, it's a major implementation. It's a major platform that's implementing accepting Bitcoin. It's not paywall. It's still subscription. What I'm really excited about is seeing like a pay per article. So when I want to go to New York, like, I don't want to have a subscription to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Miami Herald. Like, that is so annoying. Hey, how about I just give you a nickel if I read more than 15 sentences? Let me see the first blurb. So I think my point is, I think the Substack thing is a step in that direction. Once they start doing, instead of requiring a subscription, like I saw Willie Woo today, right? He's requiring his subscription, I think is $300 a quarter. He's asking now if you pay in Bitcoin for 150, I don't read any of this shit. I just happen to look at it, this TA stuff. But actually he does like on-chain analysis. But I think once he moves to a pay per article method, I think that might be more interesting. But perhaps there's other reasons why he, with what he does, he has to be more subscription based because he's more technical analysis and stuff like that. But it's a major step in the right direction with a major platform. Also, I think the OnlyFans things about how they're getting shut down because the banks are blocking them out. They can't they can't do business anymore. And there's something
that to me is just a huge opportunity.
Yep. Like, and you've got to have, if this had happened a year ago, I wouldn't be excited. Because we didn't have the tools in place, but now we've got the problem and we've got the tools to route around that problem already at the same exact time. Or at least not ready. Like Lightning is by no means like totally ready, but if something like that platform adopted it, it would really push the development forward and there'd be a lot of resources behind it. So it'll be bumpy, won't be perfect, but it'll help things move in the right direction rapidly. So and that just excites me just, looking to, just get this into as many people's hands as possible. Something also strikes me with Lightning Network, just how easy it is to use. You know, instead of having, if I wanted to join Substack, I got to pull out my credit card, type all this stuff, give them all my personal details, which is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous to give them my personal info because I want to read an article. Whereas this was, literally open up my Lightning app or my Strike app and just bing, done, like seconds. It takes longer for to type in my PIN than it does to do the transaction to open my phone up.
100%. So Substack, that's something really exciting. Is there anything else that recently has come up that's been really encouraging for you?
This is pretty biased, but the company I've been advising for 4 years now, it'll be 4 years, just got acquired. They're called LibertyX. They just got acquired by NCR, National Cash Register Company, which is one of the oldest companies on the New York Stock Exchange. They've been around forever. They used to, back in the day, they were in the running, competing for supercomputers with IBM, stuff like that. They just keep pivoting. But they've been around. They deploy all the hardware for like Walmart, Home Depot, all the POSs. They own Aloha, which is, if you ever worked in a restaurant, that's the POS system that a lot of restaurants use. They've been kind of recently, they're kind of considered a dinosaur, but in the last year or two, they're really pivoting, into software. And, this just shows, this is how you stay around, I guess, for 100 years, right? As a company, keep whatever the next thing is, you just get in and, they bought LibertyX, which we sell Bitcoin. We created a POS system for selling Bitcoin, and the team's like really, they're Bitcoin only. So the security, their methods, it's not just some flyby. Everything was built in house. So they basically, I guess they call it an acqui-hire or something like that. They bought the company so that they could bring the entire team in And I'm not privy. I have no idea why, like what exactly they want to do, but I can only imagine that they're going to want to roll out, you know, accepting Bitcoin to all these payment terminals. And also, you know, the really easy step is they can literally just plug us in where when you check out at the Walmart, you can just buy Bitcoin right there if you wanted to. But, you know, that's not really like a killer use case or anything. There's so many ways to buy Bitcoin. I really see, you're going to be able to put your tab at your restaurant with just scanning a QR code and a lightning payment through Strike. Like, that's what I see. That's going to be super cool. And again, back, it's just easier. Like, it's just better.
Yeah.
Like, the experience is so much nicer. Who cares even about the Bitcoin? It's just like, boop, scan it, done. You know, I don't have to worry about the server walking off with my credit card and, you know, skimming it and selling it. None of that stuff. We were at the brewery the other day here in the mountains, and just like, there has to be an easier way to do this. It's like six of us trying to split a check. Like, there has to be an easier way. And I think this is going to be, play a big part in that, right? Where we could each just scan, instead of giving the waiter four cards. Okay. All right. So, 50% on there and then split this in two. And, why can't we all just scan a Lightning invoice and just send sats to it individually? Mm-hmm. Why does there have to be a person involved? So
100%,
it's coming. 100%. It'll be here soon, I think. So that's a really, really exciting
element. That's awesome. So one of the fascinating things to me that I've experienced and reflected a lot on over the last year or year and a half is how, like, I'm looking out at the world and seeing things degenerate like really quickly, and just seeing overreach of governments and totalitarianism kind of encroaching into like every aspect of people's lives, and especially in countries like Australia and in Europe, it's just getting so nasty. And thankfully in the US we have some other options. We have some states that are kind of standing up to some of these orders. But that for me has been one of the most terrifying, fear-inducing things, at least in the beginning of, around like March 2020, around the lockdowns. But then joining the Bitcoin community, I've been tapped into this whole other world where there's true innovation and true human connection happening on a massive scale. And that's building out this network that's actually filled with value. And so that's, like you said, is like giving you hope. And it's given me hope for the future. But what I've been fascinated about is that, like, we're seeing all these like amazing progressions in the Bitcoin network and advances take place. But at the same time, just like a massive shit show, like clown world going on outside of us. So, and I've gone from just being very, I get really mad, right, when I see all that shit, when I see people getting arrested for just living normal lives. And I see people in power and large companies and corporations trying to acquire more control over society and control over all the information flow of individuals. But at the same time, I almost like, I'm trying to put this into words. Like, I see that progression, but it's almost, I almost see it as necessary for those things to take place in order for us, in order for the Bitcoin community and just Bitcoin itself to actually thrive and grow. Like, there's this idea of like, you can't have light without the shadow. Yep. Right.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of going into this like extreme polarized world. I just wonder, like, how do you see that developing, and what are you doing? What are you doing to prepare yourself to live in a potential future that we see like coming about? That's just so uncertain.
Well, I was very angry when I first like kind of realized what was going on, kind of woke up or the veil was lifted. Not supposed to say take the red pill anymore, right? That's considered to be extremist thinking.
It might trigger some people.
Yeah, yeah. But I was really, really angry for a long time. And I went full prepper, man. And I was like, wow, I feel like I was lied to about everything. I went into the, you know, it was also before 2012, right? And, you know, it's like, I have to question everything now, like literally everything, history, ancient history, Egypt. I became like a full-on prepper back then, made sure. And one of the things that I realized how vulnerable I was to a breakdown, to a societal breakdown, to a, how dependent I was on everything working properly. So I prepped myself that way. And I did that back in 2011, 2012, which worked out great for this whole pandemic thing, because everybody was running to the market, and you know, I was just kind of kicked back. I did a little bit of, you know, topping up, got some frozen meats, but you know, just because I'm on the lookout for that stuff, I saw it all coming a month ahead of time. You know, we didn't get stuck in any lines. I was messaging my mom like, hey, something's happening, you know, just in case, run to the store, get this and that. And so we got ahead of the curve. So that kind of prepared me mentally, like just the how at ease I was, how I wasn't freaking and I wasn't panicking. That was worth that was worth it. Just that security, all the MREs that hopefully I never have to eat. Prepping is just generally a good strategy, especially when you're living out in a country area. Power goes out on occasion, so it's just like, you know, all these other things, like it all kind of pulls together to just make your life generally better. And instead of acting from a position of fear and like a scarcity or desperation, you kind of rise above the crowds, take time to look around and see what's really going on, and plan accordingly. But you know, I've since kind of I don't know what happened. I don't feel like I'm not angry anymore at the world for like I've come to grips with it. I've come to terms. It is what it is. I don't know if it's because of I'm sure it is because of Bitcoin. I'm almost like cocky now, kind of swagger, or I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the mess, and I see things like the not the mess, but you know, the reorganization. Things are going to fall apart, but they're going to reform, and we've got a, you know, civilization, society has a lot of momentum to it, and in a lot of ways, that momentum has been stopped. Not just for Bitcoiners, but for the normies too, people that have just always had their head down and putting one foot in front of the other day after day. Now that had an opportunity to like stop and look up and look around and say, wait a second, is this really necessary? Why am I doing this again? Like they're just able to start questioning things, which is great. Instead of just taking the line, the party line and doing what they're supposed to do. The pandemic's really accelerated. I think Bitcoin, a lot of people are, interested that weren't before because they've had their 2008 experience in 2020. Like, wait a second, why am I paying taxes again? Why do what's all this money? Like, it just doesn't make sense. It's hard, you know, it's hard to wrap your brain around when you see they printed all this money and, you know, these, oh, no, we're not actually printing money. And they come up with all these excuses. And look, it took me years to understand what they were actually doing. And once I figured it out, once I learned, I was like, okay, well, technically you're not printing money, but you're full of shit. Like you're still like, that doesn't mean that what you're doing is right, or that it's not diluting people or making people poorer and driving asset prices up. Like, that's all still happening, but you know, you're technically not printing money. Like, you're just being cute.
Yeah. You're just putting numbers into databases.
Yeah, like you're buying assets that were going to, you know, that were going to crash to zero. So, you know, like, yeah, you're creating, like, that money shouldn't be there. That should be valued at zero. Like, but you prevented that from happening. So supporting asset prices. And it's just not fair. And it's not fair to the little people, to the savers and the workers and the people who aren't sophisticated enough or don't trust professional advice. And there's tons of those people out there. You know, 100%. What I'm getting at is, you know, people, oh, well, you should invest in stocks and equities and bonds and you have a financial advisor. And then, you know, just do that. And that's how you deal with all of the side effects of having an inflationary monetary system. And it's like, dude, have you met these people? Like, have you ever, been on a construction site? Like, really? Like, that's not, no, you've got to make it as simple as possible. These people don't have time. They can barely, you know, take their shoes off when they go home, let alone, you know, are they interested in talking to somebody about taking whatever money, if they even have any extra money, taking it and saving it. And then, you know, it's just not, it just doesn't work for a certain class of people. And that's who I'm interested in lifting up is the people who are at the bottom. You know, just making their life easier.
That's a really interesting aspect of Bitcoin that I've noticed is, you know, it just by its very nature, the people who are, benefiting from the existing system are much less likely to actually like get it than the ones who are really struggling in, in the existing system. So in a lot of ways, like, of course there are outliers, some people like Michael Saylor are just like out of the curve, I guess, but like, but in a real sense, there's like the last will be first and the first will be last aspect to this thing where, some people are just blinded to it. But if you need it, if you are, prepared and like ready for it, then it just makes sense. And it is, like someone tweeted the other day that you can get rich in Bitcoin by working a minimum wage job and stacking sats.
Yep.
Like that's all it. You have to do.
That's all you have to do. You know, and this is a little lesson that, you know, my dad was born at 37. So he was older, a bit older. But you know, he had like literally jars of bolts and screws and washers and like saved everything. And that was the mentality was save. That's what you did. That's how you were successful. And suddenly it's been flipped around to a culture of spending and not encouraging savings. And it's, do that, but you've got to do all this complicated stuff that requires trust and all these other individuals and you might get burned. And, remember 2008? Well, just, you know, don't sell. You have to literally watch your entire, you know, all your savings that get cut in half, but don't worry, it'll come back eventually. You know, to a simple person, it doesn't, it has come back, right? Like how long will it last? It doesn't seem like it can last forever. But anyway, the point is like, yeah, it's just a really simple solution for simple people. And,
right.
You know, I like that's one of my favorite things about it is that anybody can do it. You know, anybody, all you have to do is not spend your money. Now, economists, of course, will say, oh, well, you know, well, we give deflationary death spiral, this and that. And that's all bull as far as I've been able to figure out. Another actually exciting thing is, you know, just about the deflationary nature of Bitcoin is consumer goods and how I think they'll improve. engineered obsolescence. Things are, this is part of the fiat mentality, is that, in order to facilitate perpetual growth, you've got to be constantly selling and selling and selling. They make your washing machines and your dishwashers. They specifically put plastic parts in there that will break within a certain period of time.
Right.
They're engineered to break, so you have to buy a new one. Now,
right.
If somebody's got Bitcoin, they're gonna be like, no, you make me a, I want you to make me a washing machine that's gonna last 30 years, like, which is the one that my parents bought, it was mustard yellow washer and dryer in 79 when they got married. And I had it in my house until like 2008, right? It worked.
Yeah.
It wasn't pretty. It was, but it still worked. So I think what this will do is it'll force manufacturers, because I could, if my money's going up in value, I can buy a nicer dishwasher next year if I just wait, or I could buy twice as many, or it'll cost me half as much in purchasing of my future purchasing power to buy it. So the incentive gets flipped where, well, you know what? I better make something that's built to last, like truly built to last, because that's what's going to bring people on, because of the opportunity cost of spending the Bitcoin now and losing that purchasing power. If you're going to tell me that I have to buy another one in 5 years, sorry, I'm going to move on to somebody who can build this to last.
Yeah. To me, I think the way, like, I'm so excited for that change to actually happen. And it seems like something that's so far off, just because, we're still immersed in the fiat realm. And everyone now, the vast majority of people, at least, they just want dollars. They want fiat money, because that's what everyone's using. That's what everyone accepts. And that's just what everyone does. That's the only thing that people know about. But as soon as people make that change in their minds, like so many Bitcoiners have, of realizing, well, I don't want dollars, I want Bitcoin. And it's becoming like so much more simpler for them to actually earn Bitcoin and use Bitcoin in their life. So there's I see this flip happening where people are going to go from wanting dollars to wanting Bitcoin, and no one's going to want dollars anymore. So it's going to be harder and harder to even buy Bitcoin with dollars. And you're going to have to, and if you want Bitcoin, you're going to have to earn Bitcoin from people who have Bitcoin, or you're going to have to mine it.
Are you saying because the fiat arm ramps are going to be cut off? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying, just playing out this idea that like Bitcoin is much more desirable than dollars, and as time goes on, as the knowledge gets out that it is better, that it has better properties of better monetary properties, it's going to be harder to acquire. That's why the price is going up. Like that's kind of the idea, right? Where Bitcoin is becoming more and more valuable in dollar terms because of the scarcity and because of the desirability and adoption. These network effects all kind of like playing on themselves. But there's the specific part of it that I'm kind of like honing in on is where people are trading Bitcoin for dollars right now, but there'd be a time when that's not necessary.
Like I see.
In order to, like we will have the economy, we will have a Bitcoin economy where we can spend our sats for the things that we need.
Circular
and
economy,
there's no need for us to use dollars. In that case, it's just going to me, the price, that's where like the price goes up to infinity, right? To where, we're completely separated now from the fiat realm and we've divorced and there's no more connection. I think some people see the fiat realm as like something that's going to linger, or that will somehow be complementary to Bitcoin. But I don't really see it that way. What do you think?
do I think that some of the fiat realm, well, I mean, yeah, no, I think that countries are still going to issue, maybe not in the near term, but I think they're going to start, or countries, governance organizations, whatever we call them, but they're probably issuing currency on top of Bitcoin as a base layer, right? Like they'll be right. tokens, and there'll be country tokens, and you know, in this specific territory here, they'll require that you pay them. You know, who knows? I don't see debt going anywhere. Debt is like a gesture of faith, right? So, so like if we're going to get around, if we're going to all like live in one area and all collaborate to build a society, to build a new, a citadel perhaps, we've got to have faith in each other. We've got to have some skin in the game. So maybe we can, you know, by issuing debt, that's how we all get linked together, in a way. It's like, I guess it's a, it's a token of faith in a way. So yeah, I think when your base layer is deflationary and not arbitrarily controlled by you know, the proof of stake fellows up in, you know, the board of the Federal Reserve, I think that'll change everything. And yeah, there'll be country and locally based currencies and layered on top that are, but you know, you'll be able to verify that the gold's actually there, you know, the Bitcoin's actually there. And they'll be settling, no more excuse of, oh, well, you know, it's really inconvenient to ship gold back and forth, so let's just keep it all in New York. No more. Be much more liquid, much more dynamic. People will be called out on their bullshit much quicker, which will make just for better outcomes and better results. So,
right. Yeah, 100%. So one of the things, when you said citadels, it kind of reminded me of this, I've been noticing, is right now, a lot of these fiat hedge funds, large corporations are going and buying massive amounts of real estate and kind of inflating real estate prices. And it's making it so that property ownership is becoming more and more like out of reach. I'm not sure what.
I've been thinking about this actually the last couple of days, and about how Bitcoin will change. Right now people are using, was on a hike, went up to Maroon Bells, which is like a 6 mile round. I'm in Aspen right now, and so we were up in the mountains, went for the 6 mile hike, and I was fortunate enough to be walking and hiking with a commie, basically. I mean, nice guy, friend of a friend, and turns out he's part of the Australian, he was part of the Australian Labor Party. You know, he's a political animal, totally steeped in that Keynesian progressive ideology. You know, was basically accusing, I mean, but also completely ignorant as to the realities of Bitcoin. You know, he was trying to talk to you about Cardano, and you know, anytime anybody mentions Cardano, it's just like instantly like discredited, right? Like, okay, look up Charles Hoskinson, read it, learn about this guy. He's a psychopath, pathological. And but yeah, it just got me thinking. So we were just talking about the point was, is we were both like, he wants to help people and the poor as well, and it just, there's a different, they're coming from different directions, and it came into talking about asset prices. And you know, I think that when people stop using homes and art as stores of value, and encouraging people, I don't think home ownership should necessarily be encouraged. This might sound weird, but in this environment, of course, that is, you almost have to, right? You've got to, you know, why wouldn't you take this opportunity to lever up, put, you know, 0% down and get a piece, get a stake, ownership rights to an asset that's going to appreciate, with no money down. Like that's the smart move to make right now, because of the way the system is. But there's downsides to that. And one of the major ones is like mobility and labor mobility. Like, sure, yeah, you buy a house, but really you're vulnerable now to your geography. And we saw what happened in Philadelphia, right? All the industry left. Chester is right outside of Philadelphia. There used to be a Ford plant there. It used to be an amazing city, beautiful city. Lee Iacocca, I think his name is, was like, he just one day said, all right, we're closing that plant. And literally the city from that day forward was completely destroyed. Point is yeah, like, you know, if you own a house there, you're screwed. You can't sell your house. Whereas if you were just renting and, you know, labor can just move to wherever the work is, you're not tied down. Oh, you know what? Sorry, I'm out. Let landlords be landlords. Let them take that geographic risk. Let the labor force stay mobile. Keep the rent down. That's via, you know, not levering up these asset prices, know, because, you know, your rent is directly correlated to what the landlord has to pay to service it. So once people stop using it as stores of value, I think labor will be much more. I mean, look at the context of now with all these labor shortages, right? You know, people can't go to where the work is. There's plenty of work. You know, part of it is that they don't want to work, and I don't blame them. They had a year off. Why would you be rushing back to work in some shit job? But also, I think people are kind of not able to go to where the work is because they're stuck. And once that gets, I think, you know, when you had when America first got developed, when immigration wave in the 1900s, people didn't have homes. They were temporary and very basic. They could just go to wherever the work was before they planted roots. So anyway, I think that'll be a big benefit, labor force mobility, to no longer being tied to, you know, forced into buying a home and then being stuck there, even if there's no hope anymore. No opportunity where you're at.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what's hard is trying to decipher like when that will happen, or whether that'll be in the next 5 years or 10 or 20, like, because eventually I see the monetary value of real estate being absorbed into Bitcoin, and that's really what's inflating the real estate prices right now, is people are trying to store value in it. And even the giant, the hedge funds who are buying up real estate, that's what they're doing. So if they're able to do that easier in Bitcoin, then that'll prevent the housing price inflation.
If they're able to store this value in Bitcoin, sure. I mean, look, BlackRock, I mean, they must know something, right? They see where this is going. But I think the reversion is going to happen. We're going to have a new kind of monetary, there's going to be a monetary reset, right? It happened right after World War II. It happened after, and then it happened in the 70s. And now here we are 50 years later. Like, it's going to happen. There's no way you can read the writing on the wall. It's no more just like the U.S. hegemony has been, you know, extremely challenged. Like it's very questioned right now. So I think they're going to have to, you know, hyper Bitcoinization. We're seeing it, right? I guess Daniel Krawitz wrote about it, and I think 2014 he called it. And he's like called every, like, it's happening. It's literally happening. You know, he called MicroStrategy. He said that was going to happen, and then sure enough, it did. And then eventually, the governments are going to be forced into, you know, reestablishing a reserve currency. They're going to try and make it the SDR, but I don't think they're going to trust each other enough to do that. And, you know, with Bitcoin being a better option, that's like neutral territory. You know, that was, you know, US was like the good guy back in the 40s. That's why we were like, you know, we were the ones that were trustworthy enough to manage the reserve currency and, you know, what also had the industrial capacity. And I think there was a little bit of trickery involved as well. I think like I heard that the agreement that kind of SDR was kind of scratched out by the American representative and dollar was snuck into the agreement. believe it or not. But that's not what Keynes wanted. When he was there, he wanted it to be
right.
This SDR instrument, a basket of currencies right. instead of just the one. But sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there. But yeah, they'll be forced into it. And I have more faith now than ever before because it's all playing out right before us. It's
yeah.
It's crazy to actually see it happening. You know, even though you've been thinking about something for a long time and believing in it, when it actually manifests, it's still, you know, even just like the price, the same thing I said with the price too, like, oh, you know, 60K, like, was, you know, we all knew it was going to go there, but when it does, there's still a certain feeling of disbelief that,
mm-hmm.
Even though you believed in it, I still, there's disbelief. That is actually happening.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So for you, do you think, are you keeping a strategy of just trying to stay as mobile as possible for the time being? Do you see any value in really developing, like choosing one particular jurisdiction and plugging in and trying to develop that particular area?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it really depends on each person's like life stage and what they're interested in yeah. right now, I guess. But
yeah, for sure.
How you think about that?
You know, this whole Citadel thing. I'm interested right now in building networks of people mm-hmm. that I have similar beliefs. That we have a shared belief system. But the physical location isn't very important to me at this moment. I think it makes you a target. You know, all they have, you know, we create this like place and we're all these rabble rousers. I mean, it's the same story over and over again. The superior, you know, it's an asymmetric, this is an asymmetric fight. So
Ruby Ridge.
Yeah. Waco. Right. Waco. I mean, yeah, all these, this, you know, Philadelphia, the move, the people in move, like they'll just drop gasoline bombs on your head and burn you alive. Like they don't care. There's no morality. The state doesn't have morality. So I think it's best to just stay distributed. And, you know, we've got all these amazing communication networks. Let's just use those and leverage those to stay agile and build the personal relationships are really what matters in times of stress and, you know, also in good times as well. You know, part of being a Bitcoin maximalist is you gain some credibility because, you know, I could have gotten fantastically ridiculously wealthy if I involved myself with any of these. I mean, just throw a dart at any of these shit coins, they all go up. Right. And you know, they might, probably, you know, thousands of times instead of, you know, the 10x in Bitcoin right now. But the fact that, you know, that I didn't, and then the others that didn't, like that joins us in like, no, we're going to do what's right, not what's mm-hmm. going to make us wealthy, because that's the fiat mentality. That's the banker mentality that we're trying to fight. So that credibility, what I'm getting is that credibility goes a long way mm-hmm. towards establishing trust relationships and you know, we're dealing with bearer assets here. It's a whole crazy new world where we can't assume a lot. We have to throw out a lot of our old assumptions and like kind of operational, the ways we would operate. And it's almost like going back to like handshake days in a way and
yeah,
trusting your neighbor, just like you talk the talk, but you also walk the walk. And that's really important. I got into Bitcoin, starting the meetup was about meeting other people that were Bitcoiners. And then, that's how we met. You and I met was, at one of these, the social layer, mm-hmm. I know that's your main drive. And I think it's one of the most important, besides Lightning Network and layer two, I think it's like, it's layer 1.5, maybe, is it social network? It's somewhere between, 1.5 and 3. I'm not sure where it is on the stack, but it's super, mm-hmm. it's super important. I'm going to see you next week or this week. I think there's going to be 400 or 500 of us. When we went to the Unchained Capital BitDevs thing in Austin, just that feeling of walking in and, even I flew in from Miami to Austin and just knowing everybody in the room. And then we go to BitBlog, it's going to be all the same people all over the world. Like, we've already created this network. We don't have to be anywhere. We just kind of coalesce on a location. And mm-hmm. it's like we never left off. The conversation continues online. Mm-hmm. It's this weird, like, metaverse meet space, reality. So, but the back, that's a very long, wandered away from your question. I'm just not too concerned. I'm concerned. My main concern is being able to, leave if I want to. And that's like, I'm kind of mm-hmm. worried that, they used to say that the wall at the Mexican border wasn't to keep the Mexicans out, it's to keep us in, right? And that's kind of silly 100%. Until the pandemic happened. And it's like, oh shit, like there are countries that weren't letting people leave, like England, the UK would not let people leave their own country. That's, like, that's crazy. That's unfathomable just a couple of years ago. So that's why I'm, I think it'd be good to, have interests in other jurisdictions, whether it be a business or a property or something like that. I'm definitely building mm-hmm. a second home in another country. Not even that, both, it's multi-purpose, surf and sun, and as well mm-hmm. as just in case the shit hits the fan. But to be honest, I've actually mm-hmm. been very impressed with how the United States has been handling Bitcoin. Like, I don't know if it's just the American spirit or all these businessmen and, back in 2012, we were all expecting the, to be shut, to locked out, to be locked out of, the bridges between fiat and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. We expecting to be closed, and now they've been mm-hmm. completely institutionalized. It's surprised me pleasantly. Mm-hmm. I think America does have something. The U.S. does have something special. I hated on America for a long time. After my kind of wake up in 08 through 012, I was like, oh, what a shithole. These people are liars and thieves and crooks. And then I traveled. And then I started traveling extensively. And I was like, wow, okay. America's not that bad, to be honest, relative to the rest of the world. Like, well, it's the cleanest, dirty shirt. It's not just the currency. It's everything else as well. Like to me, Europe is a bit of a, just to be nice, I'll call it a museum to fallen empires. The society there is just they don't have that. There's something missing. They're missing that hustle. They're missing the spark. They're missing hope, maybe. I don't know. Like, they're just like, oh yeah, we're a former empire. This is what life's like now forever. And I think in America still has that kind of optimism. Even though there's, horrible people in charge right now, America isn't the government and it's not the land. Mm-hmm. It's an idea. Mm-hmm. And that idea is still alive and thriving here. And I'm seeing it. And there are people in the government that are, I think, pushing in the right direction. know, incentives help too, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
When you tell, you know, like, hey man, hey, you want to join our get rich slow scheme? Like, it's pretty cool. And how do you get rich? Do nothing. That's the secret. Do nothing. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, it's most people don't believe you because it's too good to be true. Even though doing nothing is actually one of the hardest things to do, ironically. Everybody wants to trade and they or do whatever. Mm-hmm. They think it's like, no, I just don't do anything. Simple.
Yeah. It's almost as though, like, well, if you think about the American Revolution, where there was a movement to a movement of independence, and you had to like risk your life, like you're risking your neck just to side with the revolutionaries, and
yeah,
you're committing treason, right? Like, how much simpler is this revolution now to come to billionaires and be like, listen, like, you can be a part of this simply by buying an asset and watching it grow mm-hmm. in value. You know, and that's kind of one of the things that gives me a lot of hope for the U.S. Is just like hoping that there are enough people who are able to make correct decisions of value. Because that to me is kind of the major factor, like being in a society where no one can, where everyone's like view of what's valuable is distorted. It's much more unstable. It's going to be much more dangerous to be in a place like that. But if you have a large portion of the population who are able to make correct decisions of value, then, but in order to do that, you need, proper information flow and everything like that. So it's a little concerning to me that most of the information flow that people are getting is kind of filtered through like 5 internet companies, but you know, we're working on that. So
are you talking about the actual network traffic, or are you talking about the actual information, like the memes?
I'm talking about the network traffic, like, or the the means through which
on some of them, as it means, yeah, memes, like the ideas. Oh, okay. Is the ideas that you're worried are controlled by the networks, or the actual flow of the information, the data?
I'm talking about the control of the flow of the information.
Yeah.
Because if you can control the flow of information, then you can censor particular messages that are censor information that's very really important.
I'm pretty confident that we'll be able to route around them. We just really need the impetus. People will develop the technologies there. People are close enough together. Might be slower, won't be as high of bandwidth, but I'm pretty sure. I'm not concerned about that. And you know, going back to kind of like the, you know, we need people to change their outlook. Right. And we said to move away from the fiat mentality. And I didn't do that on my own. Like, Bitcoin did that to me. Bitcoin, you know, gold and silver changed what I thought about money, but I wasn't a saver. I wasn't. Bitcoin changes everybody it touches. It takes a while, but you know, so that's why it's good. That's a get rich slow scheme. Because, you know, we don't want this to roll out too quick. Just around our, you know, in our own circles, like you can see all these people that are becoming Bitcoin maximalists and considering themselves Bitcoiners and the plebs and all that. There's more and more every day. I'm sure a percentage of them are feds, but, so the slower we roll this out, and then maybe, you know, Nick Carter's, you know, almost peaceful revolution. That's very, I pray that that's the way things are going to go down. And, you know, it'll be a peaceful, but, you know, you need to have the idea spread far enough and wide enough and get enough traction mm-hmm. so that any kind of resistance to it is you know, we can outnumber them. We have leverage as well. Like we are levering, you know, hey, buy $1,000 a day. It'll be 100, you know, your purchasing power will go 10x. Like that wealth has a lot to do with how much you can fight. And so if you get the money in everybody's hands and then all of a sudden the price goes up and then now you can play. Now you can play in their realm and
these
play some games that they're doing just for a different cause and a different kind of perspective, I guess.
Yeah. I saw one post that said like most of the billionaires of the world, their wealth increase over the last year, like 62% or something like that, or maybe over the last 5 years was that.
Yeah.
And then, but Bitcoiners, their wealth increased by 700%.
Oh, wow. We're outpacing the billionaires, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So
nice.
That's, you know, I could see, I see that continuing and definitely.
I consider my primary function is like an evangelist or an educator. And, you know, that's the thing. Well, it's too late. It's too late. And trying to tell people that.
In terms of people, that's what people say to you, right?
They say to me,
I'm too late to it. I didn't, too late. I found out about it when it was $100 and I didn't buy any. And now it's too late.
Yeah. And, you know, you try and explain to them that we're talking tens of millions of dollars eventually. And I think that's even conservative. If it really takes over, I say, you know, it's either going to go to zero or it's going to go, but yeah, I try and impress upon them, like, you know, we thought 1,000 was too late. People thought of that. Like, when are you going to stop thinking it's too late? You know, my favorite is just the millionaire thing. Like, okay, there's 50 million millionaires in the world right now. And there's only 21 million Bitcoin. Like that really kind of, hits them and to, you know, really, the scarcity, to understand how rare it is and how scarce it is. That seems to be what connects the most with them, but, there's still a long way to go. And, and it's important to build these networks now. And you touched on it earlier, but you know, a big, big problem rich people have is like friends, right? Like, are you just here because you want my money, or do we actually have something in common? So I kind of like, you know, I'm hoping that when we're all like ridiculously wealthy, you know, there are going to be a lot of people coming, but you know, the relationships you build before that really are going to be the strong ones and matter.
Right. So, 100%. And it's not just like the friendship thing is really interesting to me, because you're like, we have this idea of success and like an ultimate image or traditional image of what it's like to have a successful life. And most of it revolves around wealth. But I've talked to so many wealthy people around the world who are pretty much poverty when it comes to relationships and like actual flow of love in their life. And you know, we are multidimensional beings, so like that's one of the reasons why I think the cultural side and the social side of Bitcoin is so fascinating is you know, we're building, like, Bitcoiners are growing in all aspects of their lives, from what I can tell, to where we're growing. Our wealth is slowly growing, but also our connections to each other and our focus on relationships and all these things are improving. So, yeah.
You know,
yeah, I just thought about that.
I thought about telling this story. You've probably heard it before, but how I got involved with Liberty X, it actually all revolves around my meetup that I started back in 2012, and then also BitBlock Boom. Guys who founded Liberty X, Chris Yim and Kyle Powers, they were at Wharton Business School in University of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. They came to my Bitcoin meetup and then learned about Bitcoin there, basically. Went back, were taking their finals, and hated it, and I guess. And we're like, hey, well, maybe we're wasting our money here. Why don't we take our tuition money and buy some Bitcoin with it? And then they tried to buy the Bitcoin, and they were like, oh, shit, this is a nightmare. Like, this is really hard to buy. It's like 2013. It's really hard to buy. Let's make this a business, right? So they ended up buying a Lamazoo, had the first Bitcoin ATM in the country, in the U.S., publicly accessible Bitcoin ATM in the country. There was another one in a brewery somewhere, but it was like, it was some guy's like private cigar lounge, so it wasn't really technically wasn't public. We've had some discussions about this, and you know, so I consulted with them for some while because I'm in the ATM business, so I have experience in like cash management, and that's always been the big issue with Bitcoin ATMs. Like, what do you do with the cash? So on and so forth. How do you take, you know, 50 grand in cash out of an ATM, deposit it into a bank account? That's step one. That's hard enough. And then say, oh, I need to wire it to Hong Kong. What for? You know, like, and then do that. Maybe you get away with that once, but yeah, keep doing that. Good luck. So I never involved with the Bitcoin ATM business in any way, despite having a fiat ATM business. So, you know, fast forward. Oh, another note is that that ATM, that Liberty X ATM, was they put it in Boston South Station. So on the actual Amtrak train platform in Boston South Station, which is right across from Fidelity's headquarters. So apparently, the way Fidelity learned about Bitcoin was they were waiting for the train and were like, oh, here's one of these Bitcoin ATMs. Their first Bitcoin purchase was at this machine. And now look at Fidelity, right? Like, it gets me chills just thinking about it. So, you know, fast forward a couple years later, I'm in Dallas. I stopped in Dallas on a whim because I was going to Orange County, your home. And sorry, I didn't mean to dox you there.
Dox me.
Yeah, everyone knows you're
they're coming for me. I see the feds.
Yeah, right. I was going to there's a Bitcoin meetup in Dallas. I'm connecting in Dallas anyway. Let me just do a 3-day connection. And I go, and it was incredible. Marty was there, Pierre Rochard, Michael Goldstein, Saifedean. There's maybe like 200 people. We're there. This is really just the beginning of the Bitcoin kind of maximalists. We were just coming out of the very depressing 2017 shitcoin market, and it was a little broken from that. It was really disheartening going to the North American Bitcoin Conference in Miami Beach in January 2018, and just seeing all of the criminal scam behavior going on there. Anyway, so it was kind of like a refresher, and we're around all these hardcore guys. And we go to the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute dinner. The steakhouse, and it was cool. It was right after Cody Wilson had just made his settlement with the U.S. State Department that allowed him to continue distributing 3D plans for 3D printed guns. Walked in the room, like, just electric, man. It was so cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, talking to this guy at that dinner, and turns out, because he was living in Puerto Rico, and I was like, I'm going to go to Puerto Rico. And like, oh, talk to this guy, Evan. Evan lives in Puerto Rico. So I start talking to him, and I'm like, oh, this is Evan Rose, who is the guy who owns Genesis Coin, which manufactures, puts out like all, basically every Bitcoin ATM you see out there besides CoinFlip is owned by them. He's like 75% of the market. My buddy's getting into the Bitcoin ATM business. He's like, tell him not to bother. Is what he told me. I was like, why? He's like, well, there's this outfit coming along, and they're going to start selling Bitcoin on regular ATMs. And of course, like, my ears lit up. I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. That's my business. I have a regular ATM. How are they going to do that? And I was like, well, who's running the middle there? He's like, oh, it's this outfit called Liberty X. And I literally started jumping up and down. I was like, so excited. Uh-huh. I know these guys. I hadn't talked to Chris in years. And I shot him a text and I just said, completely out of the blue, hadn't spoken in years, just said, is it true? And he responded, how did you find out? They brought me on as an advisor because I understand Bitcoin and I understood the fiat ATM space, and that's what they were trying to merge. So that, I came on as an advisor, and 3-4 years later, we get bought by NCR, right? Like, it's just it's incredible. Like, it all from just starting a Bitcoin meetup. That's it. Like, just going around, hanging out, and talking to Bitcoiners. And things are happening and moving in a major, major way. It took a long time, the story started in 2012 with the meetup, 2011, maybe even, I don't know. So I guess the point of that is to talk about how these, you don't have to have a plan. You don't have to have a goal. Just, just keep talking to people and keep whatever your expertise is, just putting it out there and I guess being the kind of person that people want to work with, and then things happen. And like this NCR thing could be a huge thing for Bitcoin. It could be massive for Bitcoin. And to know that I've had, played my small part in it is just, it's so rewarding. It's incredible. It brings me a lot of true happiness and true joy, right? I'm proud of just how it all went down, like how, there was no like direct intention. I wasn't out there trying to hustle. It's just kind of all just, everything just fell together. The universe just brought it all together. So, maybe getting into some faith here, but it's just a kind of a path, and you just keep just plugging along and putting yourself out there as somebody who's interested in this space, and it will happen. There's no way it can't happen. You're so early, or also early right now. If you just throw yourself out there, you'll be one of the bricks that get picked up to help, build this new foundation that's built on, granite instead of sand, which is how I look at kind of what we have now, the banking system and the monetary system. To me, it seems, it just looks incredibly unstable. It's like building a house on a beach. Probably not a good idea if you want it to be around for a while. So,
100%. That's really encouraging advice, man, especially for people who are newer to the space and eager and excited, to get involved. And, it's cool to see how things can develop. And it's reassuring. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Is there any other advice that you had that you'd have for, new wide-eyed, bushy-tailed Bitcoiners?
Take a shower. Make yourself presentable. Calm down.
Goes a long way.
Yeah, people, I remember just that Bitcoin fever, right? And you get like crazy. It's a lot easier now. And I mean, we're a lot less crazy. I mean, you're on Bloomberg. They talk about, every 5 minutes they talk about it on Bloomberg. There's a lot more credibility now, but now is, this is the time we're messaging now. We're trying to recruit. So be the kind of person that you would want to hang out with and that you would want to be involved with. Don't be so mean on Twitter, perhaps. Be a little bit more, try and be constructive instead of destructive. you know, but I think I also, you know, I have no problem, you know, naming and shaming the bad actors, people that are out there trying to scam and steal. You know, my friend, you know, so, you know, Christopher, Jarab, he was around, he's my partner now in another venture we're doing. It's Bitcoin related. Stay tuned. He was around during the internet boom in like 2000, like 99. He was part of that whole thing. And, you know, for me, I always thought that shitcoins and the whole altcoin thing like was a particular like kind of evil that arose out of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin space, that it was like unique to the space. And the people, the salesmen and, you know, the Vitalik's and the Charles Hoskinsons who get out there and make these promises that they, they have, if they even have it, they don't even know if they can keep them. They might not have an intention to keep them, but they're just it's like a fake it till you make it thing, right? They just tell people whatever they want to hear, get some money, and like there's not necessarily an intent to defraud, but they don't have the capability to execute. They're hoping that they can figure it out once they get the money. It's this chicken and egg thing. And he's like, oh yeah, he's like, this is just like 2000. The internet boom, people were just, you know, he even was referencing Michael Saylor. Like Michael Saylor was a big salesman back then and making, he was a hype man for .com. And of course we all know he is an absolute, he's a visionary. He's a very intellectual, but he was part of the kind of crew of people that were promising a whole bunch of stuff that was way ahead of its time, that we like, it just was too far ahead. And I don't think we're too far. I don't think we're like shitcoins are ahead of their time. I think they're a waste of time. But you know, delivering pet food on the internet in 2001 just wasn't going to happen. We weren't there yet. The shipping, everything that was, you know, these, you know, pets.com. So anyway, I guess what I was getting at, that's kind of like, it took a bit of a weight off my shoulders knowing that this is just kind of the same story written new with a whole different format, and that these people aren't particularly deranged or evil. It's just human nature in a way. And the truth will prevail eventually. People will get it, but it's all, that's part of the market. And we've got to figure out like who's right and who can back up, you know, who can walk the walk and, you know, and do what they say. So that was kind of, that was a really good to hear. Cause I thought, I felt this kind of existential guilt about in any way being associated with this kind of fuckery. You know, it just really bugged me. I was like, I was ashamed or embarrassed of these people. You know, and I still stand up to them and call them out and everything, but that's, you just have to fight their disinfo with your info. What is it? You know, it takes 10 times as much energy to refute something than it does to state something. So you just got to get that. You've got to put that energy out there. You've got to, what is it? You've got to bear the cross, right? You've got to do the work that it takes, even though you don't want to, even though it's 10 times as hard as what they're doing. To try and help as few people as possible get caught up in this. Oh, and also don't try and change everybody's mind. You know, you just kind of plant the seed, you have the discussion, but don't get frustrated if they don't get it eventually. Everybody's got to come around to it in their own time, in their own way. You know, probably 90% of the people will go down the shitcoin route. They will start trading. You just got to be there kind of, when they learn their lesson, they will think, oh shit, Jason told me this a while ago, and maybe it'll help them come around even quicker. You know, and just, we want to try and compress their journey of learning. You don't need to, you know, have them skip it, but just try and help them kind of get through it faster and with as little economic damage as possible by, you know, when they get distracted by the shiny things. So,
100%. Yeah, man. Those are sage words of wisdom from, I'm sure, plenty of experience.
Oh, take a walk too.
Really? Take a walk?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I've started taking care of myself more now because I have something to like live for. I think that has something to do with it. It's like, you know, getting old as well, perhaps has something to do with it. But get out from behind the computer and go outside every day and take a walk, get some of that, you know, vitamin D, and don't sun your balls in places you'll get arrested. You know, be discreet. But yeah, I think fitness is, I'm really starting to take it seriously and appreciating it. You know, thanks in part to, I posted on Twitter about how I just did this, you know, my girlfriend and I, we just did this big hike, and we just walked to the top of Aspen Mountain, basically 3 miles straight uphill. It took us like 2 hours and 50 minutes. And if I hadn't been on that hike in Brazil with you, which was way more technically challenging, I wouldn't have had, I just remember just hating it and pain and
really?
Suffering. And, well, yeah, I mean, it was hard. It was tough. It's just like, you know, it's hot. We're in the jungle, walking straight uphill. And then it's like, and then no, we have to walk downhill. And then in order to go home, we have to walk back up the hill and then down again, you know?
It's so fascinating how like we could be in the same exact environment, but like experiencing completely different things. This entire time I'm like, oh man, this is awesome. I'm like with my buddies, like going up this mountain, beautiful nature.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. It's just like I hadn't, like, it was just challenging for me, physically challenging at that time.
Right.
And since then, you know, we went on our spiritual journey together as well. I had our ayahuasca experience. And since then, I've moved to Miami Beach and I've started exercising. So I was way more prepared for it. Right. You know, it was still suffering, still a bit of suffering, but, you know, you just put one foot in front of the other and just keep marching up and then get to the top, and it's incredible. I think getting out from behind the computer and getting outside and developing physical skills and endurance is just, it's just good for you in general. It's very easy to get caught up behind in the stream and go into a virtual world and pick the one that's around you.
Yeah, 100%. There's a quote that I always like. It's from G.K. Chesterton. And I need to look up the exact quote, but he said something along the lines of, only what is alive can swim upstream. And I always try to think about that. Like, where am I just like going with the flow and just drifting down downstream and not being alive, or just mimicking what is dead. It's not necessarily the case that if you are floating down the stream that you are dead.
Sure.
But like only what's alive can swim upstream. So
right, anything can go downstream.
You want to prove you're alive.
Sure. Sure. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. Cool. I wonder if, there's some like bring that into the Bitcoin realm kind of makes me think like, man, this is, we're moving into this ethereal realm where there's like there's these massive forces of good and evil and light and darkness and life and death. Like it's really coming to the fore, and Bitcoin, it really does require this like swimming upstream, you know, in culturally you're withdrawing from the mainstream in so many different ways. And then you're also like putting your value into this thing. You have to work and produce value, produce value in order to like acquire some of it. So it really is like almost this proof of life as well, where you're swimming upstream.
Yeah, the days of airdropping are over, of getting airdropped, right? Where they would airdrop you coin or whatever, or the faucets and whatnot. You actually have to, yeah, proof of life. You've got to push. You don't have to go fast, but you've got to definitely push against the. You've got to fight the current, and the light and the dark, and back to kind of like the acceleration and people waking up and. You can't, like, seeing all the darkness is painful and it does hurt, but it's also, you realize that without it, people just, you know, especially Americans, they just kind of live in this fantasy world. You talk to people on Twitter and they're just so clueless about the way the rest of the world works. People argue with like Alex Gladstein, who's the fucking man. Like, what an absolute stud that guy is, and he's brave and just goes toe to toe with all these, you know, hot shot intellectuals, and he's really fighting for justice and human rights. And then people, you know, they're like, oh, well, I mean, they're just like such a fiat mentality. Like they think in traditional Rails terms, and they're like, oh, well, if these people don't have access to the bank, how are they going to get Bitcoin? It's like, where do you think that most of the people in the world, like all the values exchanged in dark alleys and, you know, face to face and peer to peer, it's just way less safe and way less efficient. This is like an improvement on what they have. Yeah. Maybe it's an improvement on what the first world has as well. People just don't realize it yet. And I think that's why, you know, all of this kind of darkness that's come into the world is making the first world finally wake up to the necessity of stuff like this. Which I think is good. And, you know, it's hard seeing the people care about around you, you know, suffer and be afraid. But, you know, knowing that you say, hey, here's a solution right here. Right. And it's ready to go. All you have to do is this. What is this? Is it going to be the easiest revolution we've ever, you know, had to fight, you know? Saying that's the answer right there. Just buy this and walk away. And, you know, some girl on was complaining about the OnlyFans stuff. And, oh, it was, what's it, that Ayaya girl, Alela, whatever, talking about, she mentioned that crypto had been neutered. That's what she said. I was like, what are you talking about? How's crypto been neutered by government regulation? She's like, oh, well, you have to pay taxes. And I was like, and I just walked through. I was like, well, first of all, like that, none of that, like you only pay taxes on the gain, first of all. So, you know, unless you're getting a sick gain, then you have to pay taxes. And that's a good problem to have, right? Like if you get paid $1,000 and then all of a sudden it turns into two and you've got to pay 15% of that difference. Well, what's the problem with that? Also, it's like you're begging. They're complaining about the banks, and it's like yeah, but then they shut us. They lock us out of the bank account, and if you can't exchange crypto for, you know, into your bank, then you're messed up. And I was like why are you begging to be let back in? You're like begging to be let into your oppressor's cage, right? Like here's a whole system. Yeah. Just skip it. Just buy Bitcoin and pay each other in Bitcoin. And then, you know, the tools are out there. Yeah. Is it a little more difficult? Is there more friction? Sure. It's not as easy, but whatever, man, like walk away from these people who don't think that you're worthy. You know, you want to bang on Visa, MasterCard's door. You want to bang on, I think it's apparently JP Morgan Chase was the main bank that was kind of blocking the OnlyFans wires. It was the founder of OnlyFans was out. He wrote an article about it. It's like, what? Oh, you're begging to go, oh, can I pay you 2% please for every transaction? No. F those people. Walk away. We have the tools.
Seriously.
5 years, 10 years ago, maybe not, but you know, go get paid in Bitcoin and then go buy gift cards on, was it Fold or Bit Instant? What was the gift card company? The Bit Refill. You can fly on American, you can fly on Southwest, you can buy gift cards, everything. You can buy Amazon gift cards. There's nothing, virtually nothing that you can't do besides perhaps, pay rent. And I think you can even, you still need traditional rails, but yeah, get a Fold card, right? Or one of these, like, sell your corn and get USD debit card things. Like, they exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stop begging your oppressor for acceptance.
Welcome. Yeah, man, I'm with you. I guess people are coming into it and they're seeing the need there. And what's amazing is your life just tremendously improves the more you take responsibility. Mm-hmm. And in that realm, right? And that's one of the things that you reminded me of when you said it's the most peaceful revolution. Or is that Nick Bhatia or not
Nick Carter? Nick Carter.
Nick Carter. Okay, yeah. So in the Reformation, just a interesting fact or interesting little quote was, Martin Luther was part of the Reformation, and he was instrumental in, publishing the book of the Bible, publishing the Bible in German, spreading it to the masses. And he and a bunch of other leaders in the church at that time just completely rebelled against papal authority. And it was almost like state authority at the time.
Same thing.
The church was so entrenched. In every aspect of society. And so, but what they were doing was just like writing all kinds of stuff and trying to get pamphlets out, trying to educate people on what's actually going on and what's actually possible to, like, just get together and talk about the Bible in a normal church setting, and that you don't have to go through the priestly order and pay your just pay ridiculous amounts of money in order to get forgiveness for your sins. And one of the quotes that he said that always stuck with me is, some partner of his and while he and I drank beer, God defeated the papacy. And so it was just like, the way he saw it was he was just sitting there drinking beer, and God defeated the papacy by, like,
power. This is what I'm talking about with going to the meetups and going to BitBlock Boom. Like, I'm sitting around, we're drinking beer at dinner, and we're defeating the state.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
That's wow. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, Jace, dude, thanks so much for your time. I've said this to you before, and it's more for the audience, but I consider you to be one of my personal mentors in the space. And I'm just really grateful for your time and your friendship and your relationship. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience? Like, how can people find you? And anything you want to?
No, just feel? No, I really.
Oh, maybe we could see the idea of a potential pleb party.
Yeah,
another pleb party.
All right. So yeah, keep your stay posted for pleb party 2 in Miami Beach. Right around April. With the Bitcoin conference, expected to be just as fun, if not better. A meta meetup is kind of how we tried to do it before. We're just all the different meetup groups from around the country, just one big meetup for everybody to get together. And I mean, it was what an experience that was doing that with you, John. It was really incredible. I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
I run Burning Man Camp, part of Burning Man Camps and everything like that. And, you know, where I work, I've worked 1,000 times as hard. You probably saw me pacing around the whole time. I was like, what do I need to do something. This is just too easy. You know, but just the gratefulness, people were like pulling me aside at the conference, thanking me just for throwing a party, you know, like like super cool. Get together with people, start meetups, don't sit at home alone. Meet people. Don't think about it too much. I like to tell people, just pick a time and a place that you would not mind being at in case nobody shows up, which probably won't happen. Never happened to me. But put it out there, and people will come. There's so much hunger and appetite out there for knowledge and guidance and mentorship. I really appreciate you saying that, John. I don't think of myself as a mentor, but people are hungry, and you know, it's kind of like the whole Jordan B. Peterson says it a lot too, is he never would have thought that he'd be filling stadiums full of 20-something-year-old individuals, men and women, who are interested in talking about like the philosophy of psychology and like religious texts. Like, it blows his mind. There is this hunger out there. I think it's been dampened by the powers that be or whatever, and by our culture. But maybe this is the beginning of the flourishing, right? Of this brand new flourishing of all these intellectual movements with all these new tools we have, we're a part of that, which is so cool. And what we're doing today is going to echo down the line. So don't just be degenerate. Do something. You don't have to be a big mover and shaker either. Even just the little small things, just going to meet up and just hanging out with friends, really. Getting together with other people. Our trip to Brazil was incredible. The Powder Maximalist ski trips. It's just, it blows my mind seeing how just powerful these little things are. Like, we're drinking beer, we're skiing. God's destroying the Federal Reserve. It's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's a beautiful thing, sovereign lifestyle. Thanks so much again, Jason, and all of you who are listening. Stay tuned for more information about the Pleb Party. It's going to be at theplebparty.com, and you can check out more information about the Bitcoin Path at bitcoinpath.com. And with that, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual. Jason, thanks again, man.
Thanks, bud. See you later.
See ya.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode with Jason. Jason, thank you again for coming on. And thank you guys for listening. This has been a pleasure. If you want any more information about Jason, go and check him out on Twitter. At JZO, JAYZIO. And for more information about the Bitcoin Path, how to support us, to like and subscribe our shows, our episodes, go to thebitcoinpath.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at the Bitcoin Path. Oh, sorry. Twitter is at Bitcoin Path, no the. And I'm on Twitter at John Chenot, JONCHENOT. And with that, until next time, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual.